Please.
Okay. So today I would like to talk to you about a combination of experiments and theory on the collective motion of colloidal robots. So I'm not going to assume any a priori knowledge about active matter, so you can at first finish your cookies or your coffee or whatever, and then tell you when it's going to be new. Okay, so first let me show you this movie. So here you can watch a gigantic sardine school. Okay, it is cruising along the eastern coast of South Africa. It's 7 kilometers long. Okay, that's huge. And the thing is that even though there is no general or president or leader Massimo in this assembly to just to coordinate the motion of the individuals, you can see that they all move in a super coherent fashion over distances that are much larger than the typical distance between the individuals. So let me just show you another example of directed motion in animal groups. So here, I show you a locust swarm. So this one is 14 kilometers long. So the locusts fly above Madagascar. And again, even though there is no leader in the group, what is really amazing is that they can achieve a coherent directed motion, all moving along the same average direction. Again, over distances, which is much larger than the distance between the individuals. And this is not really exceptional. You can find a number of different examples of animal groups which all display very similar large-scale behavior, even though the interactions between the individuals is very likely to be very different. Good. So if you have a set of systems that displays a very robust large-scale features, regardless of the very details of the interaction at the microscopic level, if you're a physicist, you are typically in your comfort zone, okay? And as a physicist, you might want to then to understand how directed motion emerge in this type of system. So maybe more formally, you might want to know how is the rotational symmetry broken in the system if you look at the velocity of the individuals. And you might want to know also how these systems manage to form groups. In other words, if you look at the position of the individuals, so the question is how is the translational symmetry broken in this system? And to answer actually this first question, in 95, Vitek introduced this very simple model, as Hugh, I think, mentioned it yesterday. That's now something like the Ising model of polar active matter. So the model is super simple. You consider n pointwise particles, all moving at a constant velocity, and you endow the particles with alignment interactions. Of course, you cannot expect this model to be really accurate to describe the motion of actual groups of animals, but you can expect it to capture some gross features of polar active matter. And from now on, I will refer to polar active matter as I will define polar active matter as an ensemble of particles that are self-propelled, but also that interact via alignment interactions, polar interactions. Okay, so briefly, let me just recall you what are the hallmarks of polar active matter. So you, whatever the model that you consider, provided that the interactions are short-range, you've got this phase diagram. In the dilute regime, at low density, you've got an homogeneous but isotropic phase, basically a gas. If you increase the density, if the density is high enough, you still have an homogeneous system, but you break the rotational symmetry, you end up with a polar liquid where all the particles move in average along the same direction. And what is probably more surprising is that even though the particles do not interact via attractive interactions, at intermediate densities, swarms can form in the and they take the form of bands, provided that the you've got periodic boundary conditions. And here, so you break explicitly the translational symmetry, you form a group, and in this group, all the individuals are moving along the same direction. So, first feature. The second one is that when you are in this homogeneous ordered phase, the system has a giant number of fluctuations. It simply means that if you take a box here, if you just count the particles inside the box, the fluctuation of this number scales with and the average number to alpha, where alpha is a large number. It's larger than one. So that's gigantic density fluctuation. And the third robust feature, probably the most robust one of polar active matter, is that the number of available theories is much larger than the number of available experiments, okay? And that's how I got interested into this this problem. Okay, so now you can wake up. In fact, in 2010, we had zero model, physical model system available. And the very same year, Andreas introduced this beautiful experiment involving actin filament sliding on motility assays. And Julien Desaigne and Olivier Dauchot, who was at that time in Saclay, introduced also a really beautiful and quantitative shake and grain experiment. Good, so we, the thing, maybe an important point to mention is that, as you can clearly see it, on this movie, these two experiments prove that you can indeed observe swarming patterns in these systems, meaning localized groups all moving along the same direction. But the both experiments failed in finding a polar liquid phase, meaning an homogeneous state of where all the particles move coherently along the same direction without any strong density fluctuation in the system, heterogeneity in the system. So we wanted to have our own experimental system. At that time, I was in Paris. So the requirements were the following. We wanted to have the largest possible number of self-propelled particles. And you might not know that, but the real estate market in Paris is crazy. And for obvious reasons, we wanted to have our particles as small as possible. We also wanted to be capable of doing some very quantitative measurement. I mean, on the trajectories, we wanted to be capable of tracking all the individuals from the single particle to the group level. And of course, and that's the dicey part of the experiments, we wanted to have a system with known polar interactions. So to meet these requirements, we combined two tricks. So the first trick is the following. Okay. So the first trick is was to use the Quincke rotation effect. So that's a very old effect, but I'm sure you don't not know it. It has been really scarcely studied. So the effect is the following. If you take an insulating sphere, and if you put it in a conducting fluid, okay, if you then now apply an electric field, let's say in this direction, then the charge distribution at the surface of the sphere forms a dipole. And the dipole turns out to be a line in the direction opposite to the electric field. So obviously, this situation is mechanically unstable. You would expect the dipole to turn and align with the electric field. The situation is slightly more complex because in this system, you have a net current flowing through the solution. And the mechanical equilibrium, you can have a mechanical equilibrium provided that the field amplitude is small enough. But at high field amplitude, above a given threshold, the system indeed becomes unstable, and which is a steady state where the particle, the insulating particle, rotates around an axis which is transverse to the electric field. Okay, so you don't have to understand much about that. The only thing is you take an insulating particle, you put it in a conducting fluid, you apply a field, provided that the field amplitude is high enough, zoop, it starts spinning around an axis which is transverse to the electric field. So that's the first trick. Second trick, if you take an object that rotates and you put it on the surface, you convert the rotation into a translation. Okay, that's called the wheel. Okay, and it works pretty well. And rather than indicting this guy and all his relatives in the lab, we are rather now using this kind of setup. So the insulating particle is a PMMA, are PMMA colloids. The diameter of the particle is 5 micron. We use the conventional alkane oil, and we handle the colloids in a very low-tech microfluidic chip just made of double-sided tape. And the two electrodes are two glass slides covered with ITO. Okay, and let me now show you what's going on. When you look at the system in a microscope, you indeed see that all the colloids, when you apply a field, just move around in the microfluidic channel. Okay, so the pattern here is not really spectacular. What is probably more spectacular is the velocity of the particles. The velocity of the colloids, the rolling velocity, is 1.5 millimeter per second, meaning that over a second, within a second, they travel over 300 times their diameter. Okay, so you know the guy, Usain Bolt, super slow. Okay. So, good. So we managed to make self-rolled particles. Here I've just plotted the PDF of the velocity of the particles. That's perfectly isotropic. And here I've plotted the magnitude of the velocity as a function of the electric field amplitude. And as you can see, we've got a button to tune the velocity of all those guys. Good. Okay. So now let me show you what's going on when we confine the particles in a racetrack. And when you turn the field on, you can see that a gigantic swarm forms and keep on cruising along the track. So here, the scale, so this is 1 millimeter, okay? And again, the particle diameter is 5 micron, okay? So we were super happy when we saw that, but we said, okay, there is some curvature, so let's have a look at what's going on in the racetrack shape potential. And again, after some complex collision events, a huge swarm forms, and this one is going to catch up with all the small ones. And at the end, we observe the unique gigantic swarm just cruising around the racetrack. By further increasing the density, then, the system, let me show you maybe what's going on here at a microscopic scale. So this is a gas, and boom, you get this huge herd of colloids that is coming in. So then if you increase the density, the area fraction of particles, the system becomes homogeneous again, though all the particles are currently moving along the same direction. Okay, so this is a polar liquid phase. We found it with the colloidal rollers. So now maybe more quantitatively, here I've just plotted the average polarization in the system as a function of the area fraction. And you can see that we get this phase diagram. At low density, we've got an isotopic gas. Above a given threshold, we've got polar bands that propagate. And these bands then cross over to a phase which is homogeneous and which is precisely a polar liquid. Interestingly enough, this phase diagram does not depend at all on the magnitude of the electric field. Okay. How much time do I have? 2 minutes? No. Yeah? Okay. So let me just tell you that the bands, the size of the bands increases as you increase the area fraction of the colloids. However, what is quite surprising is that there is no intrinsic scale in this system. Here I've plotted the length of the bands divided by the perimeter of the track as a function of the area fraction, and you can see that all the data points collapse on a single master curve regardless of the overall perimeter of the racetrack. It's really reminiscent to what you would have in a phase coexistence scenario at equilibrium, actually. Okay. So then, increasing the density, above this value, which is 0.02, which is quite small, you reach the spontaneously flowing phase, which is homogeneous. And as it turns out, that's not even the liquid, that's more a gas, actually. If you look at the structure factor, you can see there are very little density-density correlations in this system. Okay. We also measured the density fluctuation in this system, and quite unexpectedly, we found them to be extremely normal. There are absolutely no giant number fluctuations in these populations in the polar liquid phase. Okay, so I think I should stop here. Let me just tell you that if you just now combine the Stokes equation, the Maxwell equation, if you get an outstanding student, you just put these three ingredients in a room, you come back a week after, and then you can establish the equation of motion for all the particles. And as it turns out in this system, you can show that the velocity of the particles is a constant. It does not depend on the density. And the orientation of the particles relaxes, is overdamped in an effective interaction potential, which is mostly set by the hydrodynamic interactions between the particles. You can show that the short-range contribution of the hydrodynamic interactions yield alignment between the particles, okay, a conventional spin-spin interaction, if you wish. And on the other hand, the long-range contribution of the hydrodynamic interactions gives rise to this type of coupling between the particles, which turns out to suppress, to damp, the splay mode in the polar liquid phase. Okay, and as a result, this damping of the splay mode suppresses the giant density fluctuation. So the polar liquid phase is super robust. The only way that we managed to destroy it was to actually confine the system, okay, to suppress the periodicity of the box. And when you put the rollers at high concentration in a box, you can see that first you get many, many bands that bounce around the side of the square box, and eventually the system self-organizes into a gigantic vortex. So this is a centimeter, okay? So we are dealing with several millions of particles here, just to give you maybe a better idea of the number of particles we are dealing with. I'm gonna show you a movie where we zoom in, okay? So you can see that indeed there are a lot of particles, okay, that are self-organized here. Okay, I guess that's the last movie I wanted to show you. I don't think that somebody did it, so let me really thank the organizers for the very nice weather, and thank you all for your attention.
Yeah, thank you for showing us a very nice system. Right. I'm sure there are questions.
So do I understand correctly that the particles are in contact with the substrate?
Absolutely.
So could you change the adhesive energy?
We could, but we don't know how to do that. In fact, we use conventional colloids, okay, that have a slight residual charge on them. Okay. So as we put them between the two electrodes, okay, they are driven toward, I think that's the plus electrode, as far as I remember. And of course, by changing the charge, you would change the effective, at least friction between the particle and the wall. We don't know how to control this charge. It's just convenient to just to drag all the rollers on the surface.
Any other questions?
So in the phase coexistence regime,
okay,
do you observe coarsening the way Aparna described in her talk this morning?
Not really. That's more something like coalescence. So this is actually a coalescence 7. At the beginning of this movie, we had a band going in this direction and another one going in this direction. Mm-hmm. Usually the two collide, and at the end, one of the two wins. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so it's the movies that I've showed you in the beginning, this, for instance, this, let me show you this one. Okay, that's not exactly precisely real time, but that's typically the time scale over which the system reaches its stationary state. So you cannot really talk about coarsening. That's definitely the stationary state is reached.
Maybe you end up with a single band.
That's true. But I just want to make a distinction between coarsening or ripening and coalescence.
Just on the same movie, is this sort of sinusoidal wiggling, is that a frustrated vortex or something, or due to the geometry?
We've got this wiggling motion also here.
Yeah, if it looks like it's hitting the boundary, then it's forced to turn around again. But if it would be slightly larger, the channel, would you get vortices?
Ah, that's an excellent question. So in fact, what I can tell you is that we tried, of course, to repeat the same experiments with large, wider tracks. Okay, we always observed bends. Okay, mm-hmm. What I can tell you is, if you now, rather than using a periodic track, if you use something like this, let me show you this. Okay. Okay, here you get just a rectangular box. So you get a bend that just bounces like this. Now, if you increase the aspect ratio in this configuration, you indeed, end up with something like this.
Huh. Wow.
Okay, we got a vortex crystal. Okay. And this is exactly. This is a standing wave. And when the box is periodic in one direction, this state can coexist with the polar liquid. Okay. But you have really to be very careful to stabilize it. As soon as you touch the device, boom. Okay. You reach the polar state again.
Is there any issue of the alignment of the field with respect to the surface? If you have a slight tilt in there, so you get a...
We have not tried that.
Like a chirality?
That's super low-tech. I mean, we just take the glass slide, operate on the microscope, and it's super reproducible. So.
Time for one more question. Yeah.
Why don't they exist there? Is there a deep reason, or?
I don't know if this is, okay. I should not say that I'm 100% positive about that, but what I can tell you is that this interaction term, okay, which is here, that you can show exists due to the long-range dynamic interaction between the particles, turns out to suppress, okay, the splay mode, okay, and makes the density fluctuations normal. What I should say also is that here we are cheating. Okay, we are not in a 2D system. Okay, that's periodic in one direction but confined here. Okay, so the boundaries effectively breaks the rotational symmetry. Okay, so one of the possible reasons for the suppression of the density fluctuation could be this. What I can tell you is that if you just simulate the system just using this effective potential. Okay, if you have in a periodic box, if you have this term, you just suppress the density fluctuation.
Because the interaction is long range, that's what you're saying.
Exactly, that's 1/r² in 2D. And you need this to suppress the...
Do you have a way to play with the range of the interaction? By adding salt or by whatever?
So this is purely hydrodynamic.
Or polymers or whatever.
You can...
You can screen it with polymers, for instance.
You cannot screen it, okay? Okay, you can make the solution viscoelastic, but then
that's a different game. You don't want to do that.
Okay, it's difficult for some technical reasons. It's difficult to get rid of this term, but on the contrary, it's simple to increase its relative magnitude just by further confining it. Okay, and we are currently doing this type of experiment.
Yeah, let's thanks the speaker again.
Thanks.
And go on to the next talk by Oleg Lavrentovich from Kent State.